Chevy Equinox with forward collision alert, automatic emergency braking, and available all-wheel drive. It's my ultimate mobile device. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com to schedule a test drive. Chevy Equinox. It's your choice. Own it.
All right. Time for another podcast. Make sure the instrument is clear. The microphone is well positioned. All this behind the scenes stuff. It's too bad the audience never gets to hear any of this. I wonder if they'd find it interesting. Who knows? It just gets lost in the cutting room floor. Are you ready, my friend? Mr. Producer Reggie? Yes? Ah. Bully to you. Are we ready to go? I am. Good. Put it in the books here. Episode 454. 454. All right. Three S's. Star, smile, strong. And let's get on with the countdown. We've got a letter from somebody in Little Rock, Arkansas. It says, Casey, this summer, Tom and I had a summer romance near the lake, but Tom had to go back to school. And so I'll miss him forever, and I would hope you could play for him, Sister Golden Hair. Well, Christy, here's your song for Tom. I hope he hears it. Keep your feet in the ground and keep reaching for the stars. Ponderous, man. Ponderous. Hey, Scoob! How do you like that, Reg? Huh? A little quick Casey Kasem little puppetry there for you. Yeah, he was the... he was also the voice of Scooby... Of Shaggy on Scooby-Doo. Hey, Scoob! Casey did pretty good. He did a lot of voiceover work as well as that American Top 40. He acted a little. Not a bad little career for Casey Kasem. Speaking of bad careers, here I am. All right, here we go. Are you ready, Reg? I am. Get the trigger finger ready. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. Of course. We urge you to listen on a regular basis, week after week after week after week. But we also urge you to get out there day after day after day. Tell your friends, tell your family, tell anyone who listens to a podcast that, hey, you know what my favorite podcast is? No, what? It's called Elton Jim's Captain Podcasting. Oh, is any good? Yeah, it's really fun. It's really interesting. It's very informative. Huh. How do I find it? Well, you just go to WGNRadio.com. You hit the prompt for podcasts. And then you find the prompt for this specific podcast. And then you just start listening to both the most recent episode and then episodes of the past going back 2, 3, 4 years. You've been doing this since 2016. Podcasting was just in its infancy. Now it's in its old age. Yeah, this is episode 454. So, what a week it's been. A lot, as I said, this has been quite a quite a busy month here. First month of the year. And look at that. It's already gone. Zip, zip. Zipping the modern way. It's already February. Wow. Or February. right? Is that the way it's said? But yeah, so January in the books. I hope you filled it up with some cool stuff. Hope you did some neat stuff. We only got 11 more months now to do something cool. I hope you did. And but one thing that happened, that's happening, I should say, and of course next week is the culmination of that, which is the big game, the Super Bowl. Ooh. I don't know what there's some weird rules that you can't call it you can't say the Super Bowl, and I don't know. I think I'm okay by saying it within a conversation, but you can't promote it. I don't know what. There's some weirdness that goes on with that. You see so many ads, or you see so many references to the big game. The big game. We all know what the big game is. My gosh, the entire country, if not the whole world, comes to a stop on the Sunday of the big game, which this year is this week, this coming Sunday, February 9th, whichever pronunciation you prefer. Yeah, big stuff. And in fact, I read something recently that the Super Bowl has become so just so dominant, and has become such a huge deal that, you know, people just I think the Super Bowl is a bigger day than New Year's Eve in terms of partying. I don't think that's even a question. The Super Bowl has taken over as one of the major, quote unquote, it's not an official holiday, but it might as well be. And to this point, I read that if the NFL adds another game, which they would like to do, obviously, because the more that they can elongate this season and the more that they can create interest and keep those players playing, as long as those gladiators can stay alive through a season, that's more money for everybody, owners, players, bars, television, you name it. This is, you know, everybody's talking about all the tech billionaires, your Zuckerbergs and your Bezoses and your Elon Musks. I'd look at the NFL. That's a multi-billion dollar business. That's a multi-billion dollar business right there. Yeah, you know, it's under the veil of, oh, it's just sports. It's not just sports anymore, especially not football. All professional sports have grown into multi-billion dollar, but the NFL is the undisputed heavyweight champ of American sports, if not sports in the whole world, except probably for worldwide. I would say that perhaps soccer, football would reign supreme because it is such a big international sport. But I mean, there's no question. I mean, the NFL is even exporting the game to Europe now on a regular basis. Several teams play several games there a year. I wouldn't be surprised if you have a couple of teams based in Europe. Don't be surprised. This is a growing enterprise. Everybody's talking about the tech billionaires suddenly now. They're under the microscope because of Elon Musk's connection to Donald Trump, President Trump. But the NFL is a pretty lucrative business here. No question about that. But my point is that because so many people party so hard on Super Bowl Sunday, people travel to see the game. Everybody has some kind of a party somewhere. People go to bars. They have big parties, all-day affairs. The game is now in prime time. In my day, yes, I'm old enough to say that the Super Bowl used to be played just like every other game at noon, just like all the regular games. It was no special prime time thing. And then when it started to become such a huge gain momentum, especially in the 80s, they started to push it back to 3 o'clock. And then, of course, now it's 5:30. It's more prime time-ish. But, yeah, the Super Bowl used to be played like every other regular season game. On Sunday, yes, of course, that's well, thus the name. It's in the title, right? Super Bowl Sunday. But it was noon. There wasn't this, all-day affair. But now this has become almost a national holiday. And that's my point, is that if the NFL adds another game to its current 17-game season and makes it 18, then obviously everything would be pushed back a week. They always have a two-week gap between the final playoff game and then the Super Bowl to allow the teams to recuperate and to rest up a little after a grueling season. But if that pushes everything back, so for instance now, because now there's extra layers of wild card games, the season is much longer than it used to be. The Super Bowl used to be in January. I mean, now it's the second week of February. But what you have here now is you push it back a week, and now you get to President's Day, which is the week after the 9th, that Monday. And then that would mean that a lot of people, not everybody, it's not as much of big of a national holiday as it used to be, President's Day. Not everybody gets off. Not a lot of private corporate kind of companies do, but certainly governmental and schools, post office, government related, all get off that day. And so there's a good chance that for the first time, the Super Bowl the next day would be a holiday for many people, which would make sense because according to many of the surveys and things like that, a lot of people wind up not even working and coming in on the next day. They take a vacation day after the Super Bowl. So we might finally get over the reality of this and stop being so hypocritical and just make the day after the Super Bowl a holiday to give people a chance to come back. If they flew to see the game, wherever it is, they need to time to travel home, or if they've partied hard over the night. I mean, don't forget, the average football game takes about 3 hours, 3 hours and some change, but the Super Bowl takes a lot longer and usually gets done by 9:30 or 10, and people have been partying since noon, and so Monday, when Monday morning coming down is not easy, and so people have always said they might as well make it a holiday the next day. Now they've said, well, why don't you just make the Super Bowl on, we can do away with all this kind of day after Super Bowl hangover, which really is what it is, by putting the game on Saturday. Right? Very simple. But Super Bowl Saturday just doesn't have the same ring. It would if the games in football were played on a Saturday. If they were always played on Saturday, then Super Bowl Saturday would have made sense, and we wouldn't even be having this conversation. But the games were put on Sunday, and I don't know if it was because of college football or what the initial reason why the NFL staked out Sundays, but they staked out Sundays. Maybe because there was really, at that time, there was nothing going on. 100 years or so ago, many more people went to church on Sundays, and it was considered a day of rest. And so, actually, the football games were this nice kind of, well, if you're going to stay at home, after you've come home from whatever services it might be on Sunday, especially if you were a Christian, whether it was Catholic or Lutheran or Presbyterian or whatever it is, it's usually the Sunday. And so you went to services at 9 or 10 in the morning, you came home at noon, and now you're kind of sitting around, and Dad's kind of sitting around doing nothing. And so I'm just talking off the top of my head, but I think it would make sense if the NFL said, well, there's a lot of men that are just kind of doing nothing on a Sunday. They've come home from church. And what to do? Hey, well, let's fill the void with some good old American football. I don't know if that's the way it happened, but I wouldn't be surprised if at least that was one of the elements that went into the decision to have football every Sunday. But that's why you can't, I mean, now from a marketing standpoint, Super Bowl Sunday is too ingrained in the culture. Yes, it would make complete sense. It wouldn't be a big deal if you had the Super Bowl on a Saturday. It would make complete sense. It would eliminate the need for people to take a day off of work. It would give people a chance to just unwind and not even worry about it. They have the next day. But once again, the NFL is very cognizant of its marketing and its branding, and Super Bowl Sunday is just too much of an iconic brand now to say we're going to have it on Saturday. It makes all the sense in the world to have it on Saturday, except for one: the revenue, the branding. Super Bowl Saturday, you still have your alliteration. You got your S's. So it's not that. It's like, well, it doesn't sound right. It sounds fine. Super Bowl Saturday. It sounds fine. You got your alliteration there. It's everything it needs, except football's played on a Sunday. The Super Bowl has always been played on a Sunday. They keep it there. Now, as I said, they've certainly tinkered with it. They've moved the time back from a noon or 1 o'clock, depending if you're on the East Coast, starting time to now a primetime game. They've changed the halftime show. Now that is one of the prime entertainment performance gigs around. Who is going to be the Super Bowl halftime show? Back in my day, in the early days of football, it was marching bands. It was college marching bands. They didn't even pay attention. When they were broadcasting the game, you didn't even know that there was a halftime show of a marching band. But in 2025, marching bands just don't cut it. They might be good for a parade or two, but that's not going to keep butts in the seats and eyes on the set. So I think this year we've got Kendrick Lamar and a host of other people, and it's become the big gig, that great gig in the sky, if you will. And they have certainly tinkered with it, and they've certainly tinkered with the season. As I said, they've added teams, they've changed uniforms, they've added different layers of playoffs, they've lengthened the schedule. It used to be 14 games, now it's 17. As I said, it could be 18 within a couple of years. So it's not as if the NFL says we can't change what these hard, fast, quote unquote, traditions of our sport, because they've done that all over the place. But for some reason, they're still hesitant about switching the Super Bowl from a Saturday to a Sunday. However, if this extra game of the regular season is added to the season, they might not ever have to even worry about doing it. And who knows? Maybe that was a long-term plan of theirs all along. Maybe the NFL owners and the commissioner, Roger Goodell, just have patience. They said, you know what? There's that holiday in the middle of February. And wouldn't it be nice if we could stretch out this season? Now football starts that first weekend of September, and now it goes till the first weekend of February, right? So you got October, November, December, January, February. It's 5 months. Football never used to last that long. We've added an extra month to the season, and now we can even extra a couple more weeks if we wanted to. So you never know. I'm not in the meetings. But don't be surprised if the NFL doesn't add another game in the next couple of years. They're going to take a lot of negotiations on that because it's an extra game, which of course means that, football is a rough sport. And those players, every play, they're literally their career, their livelihoods are on the line on every play. They could be in the huddle and feel perfectly fine, and go into the huddle and break for the next play, and they may never come back in that huddle again. They may never play again because the chances for injury on every play in every game, a chance of a career-ending injury, the potential of it is there on every play. That's how, you know, people sometimes take, you know, athletics and athletes for granted, but especially football players. It is a dangerous sport. We all know that. And I think if football players especially understood the risk that they are in every play of every game, they might not play, but they don't think about it that way. And you can't, or you wouldn't, or if you brought logic into it, you wouldn't be doing it at all, probably, right? And logic is what I want to talk about in terms of football today. Because it really seems, now look, I'm not here to talk about X's and O's in sports. That's not what it is. I'm always looking at the bigger picture about the state of things, the societal things, how it affects all of us. Whether you're a sports fan or not, I can argue that you may, if you're not a sports fan, you may not know what's going on with the World Series or the NBA playoffs or the Stanley Cup finals and all the other sports and the World Cups and all that stuff. You might not know who's winning anything or who's playing. You might not know any of the players. But I guarantee you that even if you aren't a sports fan, and this is credit to the NFL, you know about the Super Bowl. The Super Bowl has become, as I said before, an American event. It's not just a sporting event. It's an American event. It is like the Oscars. It is like whatever. It's like an election. It is a huge, huge tent pole kind of event. It is an event that brings in everyone, not just sports fans, but casual fans and even the general public. It's a time for bonding and socialization, even on a casual level. Most likely, most people are either going to be invited to some kind of a Super Bowl get-together somewhere at someone's house or at a venue of some kind, at a watching party, or perhaps at a sports bar, or wherever you are. Most likely, the average person, even if you never follow football, I bet you that there's a good amount. I know they talk about the ratings, but I'd love to know, like, what percentage of people in the United States, for instance, watch the Super Bowl? I just wonder what that number is. I don't care about what the TV ratings are, because that, you talk about millions and over, and I guess you can extrapolate that. It might be, you know, you figure if we have 300 some million people in the country and 100 million, it's a one third of, you know, in theory, one third of our population watches it. But I have to think that more than 35% of our country watches the Super Bowl on that one day. I just think there's more. I would think it's a lot more. So I wish, they're doing so many polls and everything else. Poll that. I don't want to hear about the ratings. I get that. But I'd like to know what percentage of people watch the Super Bowl. Just whether it's diehard fans or casual fans or not even non-fans at all. But, you know, hey, I was invited to a Super Bowl party, so I'm going. You know, I mean, that's what it's become. It's become this major socialization kind of event in America, if not around the world, at least in many countries. And so when you've got something like that, it's becoming a part of the fabric of our country. We don't have many communal events anymore where everybody's watching the same thing at the same time. It's not the way our culture, our viewing habits and things like that are geared anymore. They used to be, but they're not. Everybody time shifts and watches whatever they want, wherever they want, however they want. But the Super Bowl is one of those things where all the eyes are on the same event at the same time. It's a live event. And so you watch it when it happens. It's one of the few these days that still is growing in interest. So many of those events were like the Academy Awards or the Grammy Awards or things like that, that used to be the biggest events of the year for television. But they pale in comparison now. The award shows have really fallen off in their popularity in terms of with the general public, just because the movie industry has changed so much that people aren't seeing the same movies or seeing all the movies anymore. They don't really have a lot of skin in the game. But the Super Bowl is just the opposite. It's which I want to get to. Talk about skin in the game here. So what I've noticed, especially this year, it's been happening over several years now, but this year it seems to have really hit a peak. And a lot of different factors have come in to play here to make this reality that made me kind of think about what's really going on now today. If you're not aware, if you haven't gotten that invite yet to a Super Bowl party, if you're not aware of who is in the Super Bowl, then wow, you really are maybe a step off of the cultural barometer of what's going on in the world. But that's okay. That's fine. Some people just not interested. I get that. But two teams are in it, Philadelphia Eagles and the Kansas City Chiefs. This game has some big implications around it and some history around it now, in that the Kansas City Chiefs have won the last two Super Bowls in a row, which has been done in the past. Teams have won two in a row. Teams have won multiple Super Bowls. That's not a big deal. We've got many teams that have won several Super Bowls. Most prominently over the last couple of years, we've got the New England Patriots and, as I said, the Kansas City Chiefs have won two in a row. The Pittsburgh Steelers in the 70s, the San Francisco 49ers in the 80s. Winning two in a row is not easy, especially in football. It's a rough and tough game. It's not easy to repeat. And while teams have won many over a period of time, three consecutively, no team has ever done. I believe this is Super Bowl 59. So in the last almost 60 years, no team has ever won three in a row. So it must be a difficult task to do if no team has ever done it. As I said, many have won two in a row, and then they've gone 1 or 2 years, and they come back again and things like that. In the 70s, the big thing, the Super Bowl, the Pittsburgh Steelers had won five. And then they got it, and then it had been a dry spell for them. And then the big phrase was one for the thumb, meaning another Super Bowl ring for the next hand. They won five Super Bowl rings. That's one for every finger. So now if we win a six, we get one for the thumb on the next hand. But nobody's won three in a row. So there's history around this game, which of course the NFL loves as well. It's only going to once again bring more interest and more eyes to the game. But in that same vein, that has also brought up some new and in many pockets, some real serious people talking about conspiracy theories of that the NFL is rigging games in favor of the Kansas City Chiefs. And this has been a charge that's been going on for several years now. The Kansas City quarterback Patrick Mahomes is one of the most already, and he's not even 30 years old, I don't believe, and he's already one of the most successful quarterbacks in NFL history, given his record in both the regular seasons and most prominently in the playoffs and in the Super Bowl. And so, of course, when one team dominates, it angers all the other cities and teams and fan bases. And we start to see, because we start to see the same players and the same teams, and people say, oh, this is boring. And, of course, there are always then people feeling that, sports fans especially, feeling like, oh, well, you know, if they win a close game, if a referee makes a call in their favor, they're getting the breaks because the NFL wants them to keep going because they're a premier team and people like to watch winning teams. And so the NFL is favoring those teams. Now, that's not the first time, or this is not the first time that we've heard about this. Okay. Now, of course, rigged anything is part of our culture, right? The election is rigged. Everything's rigged. One of the things that the internet has done has given more credence and more birth to conspiracy theories, because now there's more people out there with access to the masses. The conspiracy theories may have always been out there, but they were never able to go across the globe. They were never able to get a lot of traction, meaning that they weren't out there and other people read it and said, well, that kind of makes sense. I mean, the biggest, you know, conspiracy theory that still hovers around the United States is who killed John F. Kennedy? Well, I can only imagine. Now, that question has been asked now for almost 61 years. Well, no, almost 62 years now. This year will be 62 years in November that JFK was shot. And we are still not convinced that the official story is true. Now, given the kind of technology that was present in the early 60s when JFK was killed. And how there was only three networks and how there really wasn't a lot of conspiratorial talking amongst the average person. That conspiracy theory still is hanging around for more than 60 years. Interestingly enough, President Trump has ordered, we'll see if this ever happens, but he has ordered that all government information about the JFK assassination be finally revealed to the people. So we'll see. But my point is that is one of the lingering conspiracy theories, one of the longest lingering conspiracy theories in American history. And it's still going on. And that was without the internet. If we had the internet at the time of the Kennedy assassination, I can't even imagine. I don't even know if the Warren Commission would have ever been able to put out a final determination, because back then there was still a sense that you trusted the government. And so that's what was so crazy, is that when the Warren Commission came out and some of the highest powers and the most respected people in this country oversaw this commission that was supposedly scouring over every detail of this thing, and they determined that there was one shooter, Lee Harvey Oswald, there still was at that time, even with the limited amount of technology and access and broadcasting access that we had, even at that time, there was a question. Of course, the famous Zapruder film is the thing that really put everything that has kept this lingering conspiracy theory in place. And if it really was a conspiracy, and that JFK was not just shot either by Lee Harvey Oswald by himself or shot by Lee Harvey Oswald at all, whoever, if there was a conspiracy, whoever devised it never in their minds would have thought that a private citizen with a private little camera would have been able to have the film footage of the kill shot. Without the Zapruder film, there really isn't. The conspiracy theories would never have lingered this long. It was technology. Granted, it was a very crude technology at the time. I don't know, an 8 or a 16 millimeter camera, whatever it was. But it was enough real footage that showed the actual shooting that allowed experts to refute or question the official findings of the Warren Commission. It was technology, as rudimentary as it was. That's what allowed it. But if we would have had social media at the time, when everybody has a cell phone, everybody would have been filming that. Abraham Zapruder would not have been this cultural icon. No one would have known who he was because everybody in the country would have had a video of that. And there would have been a lot. And so the conspiracy theories would have been happening in that minute. The Warren Commission didn't come up with decision until months or years later. But if we would have had the technology that we have today, especially with cell phones that record video, everybody would have had their own version of the Zapruder film. And right out of the box, people would have said, wait a minute, down and to the left, where did the shot come? All the questions that still remain about the Kennedy assassination would have been brought up in an instant. Completely changed. And that's what's happening now. We are in an era now where not only do we have the technological capabilities of capturing and recording and analyzing events that happen, but we have this byproduct of the internet, which then takes the controversy, if there is one, and allows every possible theory to be literally broadcast around the world, whether it has merit or not. And that's why the world is cluttered with information. It's hard to tell what's true and what's not. And it just bogs down everything. But what I'm getting at is what I've been noticing now is that sports in general, not just the sports themselves, but more specifically, the average sports fan has changed. And in my view, not for the better. The controversy that is hovering over the NFL right now, as we talk, with the Super Bowl a week away, is that the Kansas City Chiefs were allowed to sort of walk into this Super Bowl, that the NFL wants to have this potentially history-making event happen. The Chiefs could win their third Super Bowl in a row, becoming the first team ever. That's gonna make people heighten interest. There's already interest in the Super Bowl to begin with. As I said, it's a cultural and social event in this country. People will watch it regardless. They might not even watch the game, but they'll go to a party or something and it'll be on the background. But they're gathering because of the Super Bowl. It gives people a reason to get together. But if you add a little intrigue, if you add a little potential interest and history-making intrigue on top of it, well, then maybe even more people, even a casual fan or even not even a fan at all, might be interested to see, I hear all this talk, what's going on? Maybe somebody that has never watched a football game in their lives might turn it on. And if they do, well, then, of course, their eyes are on the commercials, which are going for $7 million for 30 seconds. If that's any barometer of how popular this game is, $7 million for a 30-second commercial, folks. Yeah, there's some revenue in the NFL. So We have conspiracy theories now floating around the NFL. They've been happening for several years, circling around the Kansas City Chiefs as they have risen and elevated into one of the best teams in the game due to the play of their quarterback, Patrick Mahomes, who has already, in a short period of time, distinguished himself as one of the most successful and potentially one of the best quarterbacks in the history of the game at such a young age in a short period of time. The success of the Kansas City Chiefs is directly connected to the arrival and the play of Patrick Mahomes. Now, certainly, he doesn't do it by himself. He's surrounded by an excellent group of people and one of the best coaches in the league as well. But he has been the catalyst. He has been the change agent that has taken a team that, for the most part, over the last 40 years, have been in the bottom of the NFL in terms of success. Kansas City Chiefs were a good team back in the 60s and early 70s, and then they just faded away. They've had a couple of seasons here and there over the last 40 years, but Patrick Mahomes has really revived this franchise and turned it into now one of the best franchises in league history and on the verge of, as I said before, making history. Now, of course, this kind of success gets all the fan bases of all the other teams upset. And it always has. But not with as much venom and anger and viciousness that I've been observing over the last couple of years. And when there was a, once again, now, you know, you could say, well, Jim, what about this call? What about that call? I'm not denying that within the span of many games that the Chiefs have played, there have been some controversial calls that have gone the Chiefs' way. I'm not denying that. But at the same time, there are also calls that don't get as much attention when they don't have as much on the line, when they don't affect the outcome of a game, or if they affect another team. It seems like it's okay now to pile on and hate the Kansas City Chiefs. It's okay to hate the Kansas City Chiefs because of their success. It's okay to hate the Kansas City Chiefs because we don't like Patrick Mahomes because he's so successful. It's okay to hate the Kansas City Chiefs because Travis Kelce, who has been one of the best tight ends in the history of the game, especially in the last, you know, 10 or 15 years that he's played, and he had great respect and was a crowd favorite and an NFL favorite. He's an excellent tight end, record-breaking, holds many records. He was liked and respected by many people in the in other cities. Oh, that Kelce. Oh boy, that Kelce. But then his biggest sin was, of course, becoming the boyfriend of Taylor Swift. And then that, of course, led to a new reason to hate the Kansas City Chiefs, because now you got the biggest and undisputably the most popular performer in the world, Taylor Swift, going out with one of the best players in the NFL and one of the best players on a multiple Super Bowl winning team, who then starts to show up at the games. She never was a football fan, but now she's a football fan. And of course, she's a Kansas City Chiefs fan. And so, of course, the NFL, once again, looking to enhance their brand. How do we get ratings? How do we get people interested in our game? It's already the most popular sport in America, but we want it to be even bigger. Well, when you got the biggest celebrity at your games watching them, of course, the cameras during the telecast go into the suite in the super box, and there's Taylor wearing her Kansas City garb and cheering as the Chiefs win, and suddenly her millions of fans around the world, especially young women who may never have been paying attention to football, suddenly start watching the games because they want to see Taylor, which just aggravates the Chief haters even more. But, you know, all of this can be explained out. In America here, we love an underdog. We love to see the underdog succeed. And then when the underdog starts to get success, we love to tear them down. And there's no team that better exemplifies that process, that paradigm, than the Kansas City Chiefs over the last 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 years. Horrible team. Draft a great quarterback. He lifts the team into one of the best in not only the league now, but perhaps one of the best in the history of the game. Which means the Kansas City Chiefs games are televised more, so people see them more. They see them win more. They see their teams lose, either to them or to someone else, and they keep seeing the Chiefs win. Now, that's a scenario that is not odd to any sport. But what I've noticed in the last couple of years is that the depth of the hatred, the complexity of the conspiracy theories surrounding the team that help them win, in quotes, that help them win, the help is in quotes, or the overall disdain for the team is much higher than it's been. Fans have said, I don't really like, you know, oh, here we go again. But they've never, like, hated the team. Online and everywhere else, I'm in conversation on sports radio, everything, you're hearing people say, I'm not even going to watch the Super Bowl. Now, that's the same people that say if a certain presidential candidate wins, they're going to leave the country. They never do, of course. Those people are, if those people that say, I'm not going to watch Super Bowl, most likely they're football fans. And while they might hate the Kansas City Chiefs, they love football enough and they look every year to the Super Bowl. So they might be speaking a little out of turn, letting their emotions go a little crazy. But my point is, they're even saying it. And there seems to be almost an accepted kind of credence to this conspiracy theory that the NFL wants the Kansas City Chiefs to win, to the point where people firmly believe, to some extent here, not a small amount anymore, that there are people, because they've seen this happen on regular occasion, especially in big games, they don't want to give the Chiefs credit for being able to take advantage of a bad call. They still have to perform. They aren't given the points. They still have to go and get some. In the game against Buffalo a couple of weeks ago, in the game to go to the Super Bowl, there was a very controversial call whether the Buffalo Bills had a first down or not on a fourth down play, which means that if they don't get it, the ball changes possession. And Buffalo was driving, and Buffalo had a one-point lead with like 6 minutes to go. And who knows? They could have kicked a field goal. They could have scored a touchdown. And they would have put more pressure on Kansas City to go down the field and score a touchdown. They would have probably kicked off, and Kansas City may have gotten the ball at their own 20. But instead, on a controversial call that said that Josh Allen, the quarterback for the Bills, did not get the first down, even though it looked like from several angles that he did, the referees on the field ruled that he didn't get it, which gave Kansas City the ball at the 50-yard line, only 50 yards away from the end zone to score a touchdown, as opposed to the 20, 30-yard difference. Of course, now nobody is saying and nobody's giving credit to the Chiefs for getting the ball back, whether it was a controversial call or not. Patrick Mahomes led the team down to score a touchdown. I know if that was the Bears and they got the ball back at the 50-yard line, they would have been three plays and out. And the Bills still would have had the lead. But no one gives the Chiefs credit for, yes, they got the ball back, but then they also did what it took to get the go-ahead touchdown. The conspiracy theorists don't want to acknowledge that it still took the team coming through in the clutch under pressure to take advantage of that, even if you want to call it that gift or that controversial call, whichever viewpoint you have. The people that don't like the Chiefs don't give the Chiefs credit for taking the ball, getting the ball, and going down and scoring that touchdown. That took something. That took guts. That took talent. That took performing under pressure. That was what they needed to do, and they did it. That's a sign of a good team. But if you hate the Chiefs, you look at, oh, they got a lucky call. But that lucky call didn't have them score the touchdown. They still had to go down the field 50 yards and score that touchdown, which they did. But the conspiracy theories don't want to give them credit for that, because it's easier to say, oh, the refs gave them the game. It's not true. But if you hate the Chiefs and you believe in the conspiracy theory, this is enough evidence to make you feel like you've got a good case. Even though when you take it apart, it does fall apart. But for the most part now, there's a good number of people that really believe that the Chiefs are getting favorable calls by the refs by order of the NFL. And there's people that really believe it. And there's people that really hate the Chiefs to the point of true hate. Swear online, people posting, swearing, throwing things. This isn't just like, oh, those darn Chiefs. No, this is real anger. Unbridled anger. Hate. Vicious. Violent. And I'm saying, wow. You know, I've been fortunate enough in my lifetime to have seen some pretty historical sports feats. I'm a sports fan. I like all sports. I'm not one of these crazy sports fans that wears all the paraphernalia and woof woof woofs and all that. Never have been. But I've enjoyed watching sports. I played sports. I'm knowledgeable about sports. And I like to watch a good game. I appreciate a well-played game, even if the team that I'm rooting for loses. If it was a good game, I feel satisfied. Now, that is completely out of the realm of reality for most diehard fans of any team. That's why I'm not really invited to a lot of sporting events with my friends anymore. Because I watch a game and I go, why aren't you screaming? Did you see that horrible play? And I'm like, well, it was that other team made a nice play. They don't want to hear that. So I don't get invited to many sporting events anymore, because I tell it like it is. And sports fans don't want to know how it is. They want their team to win, whether it's right or not. And if another team wins the same way, they'll hate that team. But if they won the way that they're mad at the other team for winning, then they say, hey, it works for me. Sports fans are the most delusional, the most superstitious, and the most illogical people on earth. There are people that really believe that they, in some way, they personally, have some outlook or they somehow have power over the outcome of a game. When I wear this sweater, they always win. When I sit in this chair, they always win. When I serve this chili, they always win. Oh, well, this isn't, well, my favorite chair is not working anymore. I better go sit in the other chair. And then that becomes the lucky chair if something good happens. There's no logic here at all. And the thought that one person thinks that they are having an impact in some crazy supernatural way on the outcome of a game, which is dependent on so many factors that they have absolutely no connection to at all, is hilarious. But don't try to tell that to a diehard sports fan. But what I've noticed is that there's a different intensity now. I've been lucky enough to have been witness to some pretty big historic moments in sports. I was a young kid, the Miami Dolphins, still a record that still holds, won as their only undefeated team in NFL history. Now, granted, they only won 17 games. They won 14 regular season games and the three playoff games, including the Super Bowl, to be 17-0. Today, 17 games is the season. That's not even counting the playoffs. So it's harder to be an undefeated team now. But that doesn't matter. That's where the rules were playing, and that's what they did. But my point is, I saw that. And even though I was a Bear fan, right, especially as a little kid, I was rooting for Miami to win that game. They had been 13-0, and they were going to make history. And they were one of the better teams in that era. And they were on foot. They were on TV all the time. Bob Greasy, the quarterback; Don Shula, the coach; Larry Zonka and Jim Kick; Paul Warfield; Manny Fernandez; Mercury Morris. I could still name these names of the Miami Dolphin teams. But I remember rooting for Miami to go 14-0. I didn't hate the Dolphins. I didn't want them to lose the Super Bowl. I wanted them to win. How cool is this? The first undefeated team in the history of football, and I'll be around to have seen it. I still remember the game. There was a controversial fumble. But my point is, there weren't conspiracy theories. People were happy to see Miami to win. They wanted Miami to win. In baseball in the 70s, same thing. I was a diehard, still am. I mean, I don't watch the game as much as I used to, but I was a diehard Cub fan when I was a little kid, even though the team at that time was terrible. But at that time, the Oakland A's were one of the best teams in baseball. They won three consecutive World Series, just like the Kansas City Royals. But people weren't rooting against the A's to win, like in a general way, like, we hate the A's. They had some of the best players, and people enjoyed that. Reggie Jackson, Bert Campanaris, Catfish Hunter, Gene Tennis, Sal Bando, Joe Rudy, Bill North. I still remember them. I still remember the players. Kenny Holtzman. We rooted for them to win the third championship. In the 70s, they still try to have this tag. I don't think it's the same anymore. But the Dallas Cowboys were one of the best teams in football in the 70s. And even in the early to mid 80s. And they were on television every week. And this is when you only had three networks. So you saw a Dallas Cowboys game almost every week. Aside from your local game, the other game was always Dallas. They were on every week. Roger Staubach and, you know, the whole crowd there. I remember, once again, you know, Roger Staubach, Walt Garrison. I mean, these are from the 70s. But, you know, but then they had later had Troy Aikman. But my point is, you saw them and they were called America's team, and people did like watching the Dallas Cowboys. They were a good team, and even if they weren't from your town, you watched them and you knew them and you liked them, just like in baseball, the Cincinnati Reds, the Big Red Machine, Pete Rose, Johnny Bench, Joe Morgan, Dave Concepcion, Tony Perez, George Foster, Cesar Geronimo. I could name them because I used to see them every week because they were on all the time because they were one of the best teams in the league. And you rooted for them. It was the same thing in basketball. You know, you had teams like at that time, you know, the L.A. Lakers with Wilt Chamberlain and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. And especially now in the last, you know, in Chicago history, with the 2-3-peats by the Bulls. People love the Bulls. They loved Michael Jordan. And there were conspiracy theories all the time back then that the refs were giving the Bulls calls. Oh, the NBA wants the Bulls to win. The conspiracy theories have been around forever. But they never gained traction because of the internet. Wasn't around at the time and didn't have the hold that it has on people now with social media. And people genuinely liked, they all idolized Michael Jordan. So while, yeah, he beat their teams and he may have, but you had to respect them. And you still, and you had to like them and respect them, whether they were your home team or not, for what they were achieving, which is, I believe, you have to do with the Chiefs. You might not like them if they're beating your team, but you have to respect what they're doing. They're well coached. They play well, and most importantly, they come through in the clutch, which drives people crazy. And so they're looking for any reason to hate them and any reason to believe that they're getting extra help. But there's a new element to this hatred, to this vehement, violent anger, and to the depth and the belief in these conspiracy theories that didn't exist as much in the past, that now are a part of football, sports in general, which I believe, sadly, has changed sports overall. And even worse, has changed the average fan. And that is legalized gambling. Now look, people have always bet on sports. And basically, one of the main reasons why football has become the number one sport in the country is because it is the most gambled on sport. And has been since the beginning of time, and since football started. And there was always illegal gambling. Back in the 70s and 80s, they had a professional gambler on when it was illegal. This is when it was illegal. They had a professional gambler named Jimmy the Greek, who was a part of the official NFL Network pregame show with Brent Musburger, and he would give his predictions and the line, and bettors know what I mean about the line. Oh, I'm going to take, Miami by 4 points. That he was speaking directly to illegal betting on national network television. So betting and football have been intertwined for decades, almost since its inception. As I said, the amount of money bet on football has helped elevate it. But something changed when gambling became legalized and gambling on sports became legalized around the country. Because now you had a certain contingent that bet on every game. Those were the gamblers. But now with gambling being legal, because it was illegal, you had to know somebody, you had to place a bet. So even if the average person wanted to bet, they might have been a little leery about, well, I don't know if I want to get involved in any kind of illegal thing. And of course, the growth of the football pools with the squares grew, because that was kind of like a quasi gambling thing, which also helped the game. But what helps, what that does is gives people skin in the game. It gives them some reason, because to root for a team and be more focused on who wins. Before, if you're a fan, you want your team to win. But if they lose, okay, well, what are you going to do? But if you've got $100 on a game, well, now who wins makes a big difference. We see the rise of the fantasy football leagues, which people pay to win. The stakes are higher. But now that legalized gambling has come in, and you see the commercials all the time, they're basically prompting you to bet play by play, not just who's going to win or lose, but within the game. You know, you could bet right now, is this guy going to get a, you know, the Super Bowl has all these prop bets, you know, what's going to be the first touchdown, who's going to do all this other stuff. Betting around football has always been there, but now that it's legalized, now that the negativity and the unlawfulness has been lifted from it, more people are betting on it that maybe would never have bet before, which means now people have a vested interest, not just being a fan and wanting their team to win, whether they like the team or not, and hoping that they would win, but now they have some skin in the game. They've got some money on this game. And depending on how much of a degenerate gambler you are, it could be big, big money. I saw online that somebody lost $1 million on the Bills game against the Chiefs. He was not happy online about losing that bet. He was not happy about that call that went against the Bills. And he was letting the expletives fly. Because now, of course, everybody has a podcast. Everybody posts. So you've got people literally setting up a microphone in their basement, in their bedrooms, and now everybody is an expert on sports. So you've got a growing interest in the game, because now people are sharing, once again, because of social media, they are sharing their opinions with the rest of the world, which you never had that opportunity. So now everybody's a sports expert. So once again, the idea of being a sports expert has been diluted, just like so many other things in the media have been diluted, the movie reviewer and things like that, because everybody could just set up shop and become a football expert. But the legalized gambling, I believe, has changed the tone of sports in a more negative way, and it's changed the tone of the average sports fan. Because now when that team loses, or that other team keeps winning and they bet against them, they've got some skin in the game. They're losing money. It's not just, oh, I hate the Chiefs. It's like the Chiefs made me lose $200. The Chiefs made me lose $1 million. There's a deeper investment in the game, not just the love of the game, but money on the game. And we know how people react about money. And so while I'm sure that the companies that own all these gambling services, and many of the times now they're actually in business with the leagues and the teams, which makes it very incestuous, the sports now are promoting gambling. They used to pretend that there was some kind of a anti-gambling view in their minds. Baseball makes a big deal about gambling, and yet there's sports books on the grounds of baseball fields, especially one here in Chicago at Wrigley Field. And yet Pete Rose isn't in the Hall of Fame because of his gambling. There's a lot of hypocrisy, but there's a lot of money. And at the end of the game, that's what this is all about. Sadly, when I'm seeing these conspiracy theories. I mean, let's really dissect this argument. If you believe, or someone believes, that the NFL has meetings with the refereeing team that will be in charge of a Chiefs game, and they say they have some meetings or there's some kind of communication that when in doubt, give Kansas City a break here. If it looks like they could use a little break to get a, you know. If the NFL is really doing that, do you, I mean, that's at the core of your argument, that the NFL is telling the refs to cheat in favor of the Chiefs. So you're already saying that the NFL does not care about the integrity of its game. You're also saying that the referees are not honest and they don't care about the integrity of themselves and the game because they're in charge of the game and they're making the calls, and so their integrity is on the line. So they don't care about their personal integrity or the integrity of the game. The NFL as an entity wants this one team to win and has told the referees to do this, so they don't have integrity or care about the real competitiveness or integrity of their game. Do you honestly believe that there are meetings or some kind of communications from the highest powers of the NFL to the referees to say give them a break, and then they do that? Do you honestly believe that's going on, these games are rigged, the NFL is telling them, just sound good in your anger and your disappointment that the Chiefs win again and that they may have gotten a call that was questionable. But when you look at the reality of it, do you really think that Roger Goodell or the heads of the thing, and you know, in this country, can anybody keep a secret? Nobody keeps a secret today. Nobody. We have whistleblowers about UFOs today. Okay, there's no secrets in today's world. And yet, this supposed conspiracy that's been going on for several years now, you mean to tell me nobody who's within that little circle has shared an email, leaked an email, or said I was in a meeting when the referees were told? Where is the whistleblower? Where is the proof? There isn't any proof, because the reality of the scenario that the NFL would have some kind of meeting or some kind of communication with the referees to say, give Kansas City the opportunity to win, doesn't make any sense in reality. It makes sense to the angry, passionate, Chiefs-hating fan. It's a real easy, unsubstantiated argument to make. But in the reality, do you really think that that is a reality, that that's really happening, that there's a meeting and that there is a directive and an edict to let Kansas City win? If you believe that, then you shouldn't watch. Two things should happen here. If you believe that's the case, then you should never watch the NFL because it's rigged. And then, like many people are now saying, using the thing, well, the NFL has become like professional wrestling. It's not real. Well, you know, I used to have a friend who swore to me wrestling was real back in the 80s and 90s. And I would say, come on, this is fake. What are you talking about? Well, now, you know, it's not a sport. It's entertainment. It's well known that there are scenarios that are made. But I had a friend that was a dyed-in-the-wool wrestling fan back in the 80s and 90s and almost probably broke off our friendship because I was like, you know, this isn't real. But he wouldn't believe that. So if you think that the NFL now is just like a production, like wrestling, if you honestly believe that, or if you're just letting your emotions and your anger, because you're tired of seeing the Chiefs win, and you're tired of seeing your team lose, or you're losing money because you're betting against the Chiefs, then why do you watch the NFL at all? If it's if you believe that it's rigged, then why would you watch it? It's rigged. Don't give it your time. Don't give it your attention. Let it go away. So they don't believe it's rigged. They're just angry and they're looking for some reason because Patrick Mahomes did it again. And in today's world, that makes people more mad. They're not rooting for the winner anymore. They like to root again. They say, I'm tired of the Chiefs. But nobody was tired of the Pittsburgh Steelers when they won five Super Bowls in the 70s. We used to enjoy watching Terry Bradshaw and Franco Harris and John Stallworth win Super Bowls. We rooted for the Steelers. We rooted for the Miami Dolphins. But in today's world, because there's this intense connection now because of gambling, that there's real skin in the game, whether it's the fantasy leagues or now the betting on games, betting within the games, betting on first downs, betting on everything. Now there's real money involved here, and so a loss is not just a disappointing loss and we'll get them next week. It's, I lost $300 today because of that Mahomes and because of that referee, or in this case, somebody lost $1 million. He obviously had enough to where it was, he's not in the poorhouse. He could afford to lose $1 million, but I don't care what you say. A million is a million. I don't care how rich you are. You don't want to lose $1 million. And that's where the anger and the venom and the violence has really changed the tone of sports and the perspective of sports. You should want the Chiefs to win. This is cool. This is history. You're going to be able to see a team win three Super Bowls in a row. Nobody's ever done that. Why would you root against that? But in today's world, we don't look at that. The average sports fan, I think, is much more angry and jaundiced and jealous and spiteful against anything that goes against their team or goes against or is successful. But here's the thing, as I said, there's two scenarios here. If you really believe this ridiculous theory that the NFL is sending down edicts to let Kansas City win or give them opportunities to win. If you really believe that there's meetings that go on, okay, then that's delusional, but okay, fine, you believe it. Then A, that means the league has no integrity. The league is entertainment. It's not true sports. It's not true competition. So you shouldn't watch it. So immediately the ratings should go down to zero. Because it should become the fourth popular sport in America. Because it's not really a sport. It's entertainment, according to you. You believe that. You just said the NFL wants them to win. They're compromising the integrity of the game in order for one team to win. That is just the same as having a script as to who's going to win the wrestling match. So that means it's not competition. It's not fair. It's predetermined, and so it's entertainment. It's not competition. So if you enjoy the competition of the game, you shouldn't watch it anymore. Or if you're a ferocious gambler, why aren't you betting on the Chiefs? To me, that sounds like it's the easiest thing. If you think the fix is in, and the Chiefs have the NFL's blessing to go to the Super Bowl, then if you're a gambler who gambles every week on football, then why didn't you bet every week on the Chiefs to win? Because you would have won up to this point. What? I think they won 14 games, 13 or 14 games this year. And now they've won two playoff games. They may win a Super Bowl game. Why don't you just bet on the Chiefs? If you believe that the fix is in and that the Chiefs are getting preferential treatment, then just bet on the Chiefs every week. Whether you like them or not, you're going to make money on them. Because in your mind, the game is rigged. They're going to win. You're going to win more games than you lose for them to get to the playoffs and for them to get to the Super Bowl. So just bet on the Chiefs every week. They should be your favorite team if you're a gambler and you believe there's a fix. It's the easiest bet in the world, according to your theory. Bet on the Chiefs every week. You're going to win in the long run. This is what I mean about the logic of football fans. And I'm not even football fans, but any fan. There's no logic involved. There's superstition, there's jealousy, there's anger, but there's no logic. And for someone who watches the game and appreciates the game, and I don't bet on the games, and while I'm a fan of some teams, I enjoy to watch the artistry and the game. As I said, sometimes if my team is up by 2 points and the other team is up by 3 points, the other team is driving, I'll root for the other team to kick a field goal to tie it up because I'm enjoying watching this game and I'd like to see it go to overtime and see who wins. Now, if you tell that to a fan of a team, they're saying, what kind of a fan are you? You would root for the other team to tie it up and possibly go to overtime and lose? You're crazy. Well, maybe I am, but I enjoy watching a good game. And so if there's a good game going on and there's a chance to go to overtime and have more excitement, I'd rather see that happen than to see my quote-unquote team win, because I appreciate the game. I appreciate the excitement of the game. I'm not tied to who wins or loses. It doesn't define me. I'm not wearing a hoodie or a hat or whatever. So I'm not identified by that team. I enjoy the sport. I enjoy if my team wins, don't get me wrong, but at the same time, I like to see a well-played game. Now, certainly, I know that makes me an anomaly amongst quote-unquote sports fans, and 99.9% of people who are sports fans say you're an idiot, and you're not a sports fan, and you're not a fan of a specific team, because no one, anybody would ever do that. Well, then maybe I'm not. I'm a fan of the sport. I'm a fan of sports. I may not be a fan of a specific team that I live and die by, that you can't, don't talk to me today because my team lost. No, I'm not like that. I don't bet on games. I'll never forget, when I was a young kid, I was 20 or 21. I was at a bar one time and there was a hockey game on in the bar. There was a party going on that I was invited to, and people were mingling around in different little groups, and I was sitting at the bar watching the game. I was a hockey fan, still am. I enjoy watching the game. So the game was on TV, especially at this time. Blackhawks home games weren't on television, so you had to watch them in a bar. And I'm watching the game, and one of the people who I didn't know at this party came back and sat next to me and said, oh, you're watching the hockey game, huh? And I said, yeah, it's a good game. And he said, who do you have? And I, I was a young guy. I said, naive to this, I'm not a gambler. And I said, what do you mean? He said, well, who do you have? Who are you betting on? And I said, oh, no, I'm not betting. I'm just watching the game. I'm a Hawks fan. I like hockey. He looked at me, he was an older guy, but not that much older, but he looked at me like I was from outer space. And he just kind of nodded and he walked away. Because in his mind, if you're watching a sporting event of any kind, whether it's your home team or someone else, if you're watching a hockey game or any kind of sports game, you got to have a bet on it, or why would you be watching it? Or why would you care? To me, that was a foreign idea. But to him, you mean you're watching a game for the love of the game? You don't have any money on it? And I just think that over the last several decades, now that it's gambling is legalized and it's accepted and it's encouraged, and we're bombarded by commercials, that the tone of sports and the psyche of the average sports fan, regardless of what sport it is, hockey, basketball, baseball, football, soccer, whatever it is, the psyche of the average fan has changed. They don't root now for the sport. They don't root for the good teams or the good players. They root against them. They're tired of them. They hate them. They devise conspiracy theories. I heard a story one time that a reporter during the Bulls run of the of their championships, the first time around, the first three-peat, that a reporter, there were allegations that the NBA was telling the refs to give the Bulls their calls. And during the warm-up before the game, a reporter went up to Michael Jordan and said, you know, there's a lot of talk that people believe that the Bulls get all the calls, that the refs are cheating in the Bulls' favor. And Michael Jordan looked him straight in the eye and said, so? And that sort of put an end to that, because it sounded so silly. And if they are, well, then if that's the case, then we're benefiting from it. If you believe that, believe that. But I think if you believe that, you're really putting down the talent of the athlete, the talent of the team. But people don't think that way anymore. It's their team, and more importantly, their money, their bet. And so they've got a vested interest now. And sadly, you're seeing violence at games. You hear these stories in Philadelphia, the other team in the Super Bowl, that the tailgating and the fans in Philadelphia, if you go to a game with an opposing jersey, you will be physically attacked. And that's no joke. I heard stories about, you know, and to the point where people are saying, why are you even wearing a Washington Commanders jersey when you're going to come to the Philadelphia parking lot here for the game, when you know the way Philadelphia fans act? They throw beer at people. They let the air out of their tires. They attack them. They tear their jerseys off. They used to have a holding cell in the old Philadelphia football stadium and Veterans Stadium. They had a holding cell because the violence during the football games with the Eagles was so terrible. People would throw beers, and I mean, it was outrageous. And that's even heightened now, even more so. Because I said there's a different psyche to the average sports fan, and I think a lot of it has to do with gambling. I don't think it's only going to get worse, but as a fan of sport, I think that we've lost a little appreciation for the game. I have no vested interest in Patrick Mahomes. He's from the Kansas City Chiefs. It's not my favorite team, but I watch enough of the games because they're on television quite a bit that I have respect for the guy. He always pulls it through. You got to respect it. If you are a fan of the game, if you appreciate the game and the sport and the competitive nature and what it takes to be a great player, I don't know how you can hate the Chiefs, or I don't know how you can hate the Dodgers, or how you can hate the Yankees or these perennial teams. Oh, I hate them. I hate them. Well, do you hate them because they win? It might be disappointing that they beat your team, but then there should be a side of you as a fan of the sport to appreciate the excellence that these teams and these individual players have. So I just think that the internet and social media has helped change the psyche of the average sports fan. But I think to add to that even more so has been the legalization of gambling, especially on sporting events, which has now turned the average fan into a angry and depressed and conspiracy-laden, grumpy fan, as opposed to somebody that enjoys watching the game and enjoys a competitive game and a great game that was played. So I don't know who's going to win the Super Bowl next week or this Sunday. It's going to be a good game. And the Eagles have every chance of winning, even though the Chiefs are the favorite. And yes, there may be a controversial call that goes in the favor of the Chiefs. I don't know or not. But I guarantee you, if the Chiefs do win, they will have earned it, because it takes a lot to score points and score touchdowns in the NFL. It's not just luck, and it's not just help from the referees or the supposed help, because you still have to score. You still have to get in that end zone, and that ain't easy. So we'll see if history is made in Super Bowl Sunday. And so ends another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. And don't forget to tell your friends, tell your family, tell anyone who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. Your loyalty and devotion are much appreciated. Hope you enjoyed episode number 454. I'm Jim Toronto. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. You've been listening to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. From the end of my mind to your ears. Go, Chief.